Welcome everyone into the JSOnline.com and PackersNews.com Packers podcast brought to you by Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino. I am Jim Ozarski along with Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Welcome.
And we are back for week two after 10 days of sort of deconstructing and thinking about a week one victory in Chicago. And you know, a year ago this time it was the same deal, right? Vikings coming in week two at Lambeau, and Mike Zimmer's group comes in 1-0 as well.
Yeah, very much, you know, really the same setup as a year ago, and sort of the same kind of scenario. Packers were coming off a big win against Chicago, where their defense played pretty decent. The offense was shaky until, you know, with Rodgers getting hurt, and then it came back. So this week, you see the Vikings and kind of an unpredictable team. I'm not sure what to expect out of them after they threw the ball just 10 times against the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday in a really easy win, 28-12 win. What do they do when they come here? And that'll be really interesting.
Yeah, I think the Packers fans are looking at, wow, you know, you're right, 28-12, up 28-0. Dalvin Cook runs for over 100 yards. They pound the rock, 38 carries. But you know, kind of inside the numbers there, Tom, to your point of what to expect, you know, Atlanta, two interceptions, a fumble, and a block punt.
Yeah.
All in the, I mean, that's how the Vikings scored. And all of those ended up, you know, look, there was one 82-yard drive for the Vikings offense, but really if they were tasked with pushing the ball down the field, that didn't really happen for them. Atlanta 33, the Atlanta 28. The Atlanta 45, you know, I mean, they had great field position. They took advantage of it. Kudos to them. I guess I'll be curious if they can run it that efficiently and that often, you know, if they have to go 75, 80 yards every time.
Yeah, so I was talking to somebody, coach in the league, about the Packers playing. So against the Bears, they played what is known as a Bears front. And essentially what that is your two defensive ends cover the two guards, and the nose tackle covers the center. So you force them into one-on-one blocks with those guys because, you know, if those guys don't block those guys or try to double team, then someone's coming free. So it really gums up the middle of the defense, and that really worked against the Bears. What they did was they said, Mitch Trubisky. So when you play that front, a lot of times you have to play man-to-man defense behind it. So they said, Mitch Trubisky beat us. Go ahead. That's what Tremont Williams was saying when he made that comment that we tried to get him to play quarterback. They tried to put the whole game on his shoulders. I think they're going to do the same thing with Kirk Cousins. I think they're going to do the same front. They're going to try to put pressure on an offensive line that's kind of questionable and make Kirk Cousins beat them. Now, the difference is they've got Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs and Kyle Rudolph, but this is the test where you go, okay, Jair Alexander and Kevin King, here you go. You guys want, you know, claim your great man-to-man cover people? Go prove it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, Tom. I mean, maybe the one personnel difference for Mike Pettine is you see a little more B.J. Goodson than Raven Green to help with the run defense because I think Mike Pettine knew Matt Nagy was never going to run the ball. Whereas I think, the reason Mike Zimmer's gone through four offensive coordinators since 2016 is because he wants to run the ball. Yeah. So I don't think they'll give up on it as quickly as the Bears did.
No.
That said, I do agree with you. I mean, Kirk Cousins is the king of the average quarterback. Sure, he's better than Mitch Trubisky, I think, as a pure passer. But I'd take that chance, too. I'd have him put it up 30 times because he's going to give it to you.
Yeah. I think so. The difference, I agree with you that B.J. Goodson's going to have to play. I think they got away with Raven Green there because they had to play that way because of Tariq Cohen, because right. he can split out. He can, you know, they couldn't have a middle linebacker going out and covering him.
Yeah.
So in this case, you know, I don't think there's that threat. I mean, Dalvin Cook could go out, split out, but it's a little different animal there. I think, yeah, they are going to put it on Kirk Cousins' shoulders. Now, he came in here and threw for 415 yards yeah. last year. They did the same thing. And three or four touchdowns, I think he had in that game, too. So there is some risk involved there. He, when he's a hot quarterback, he's pretty good. He just hasn't gotten, you know, a team over the top. You know,
right.
he hasn't been a clutch guy, you know, with – when he's gotten to the playoffs or down the stretch.
Or when it matters.
Yeah, you know? When it really yeah. matters. Yeah.
So, I guess what I'll say there, Tom, though, is so this time last year, you're right, you know, 1-0, what are the Packers? They had the lead early. Obviously, people might remember more the Clay Matthews, you know, body weight gate, you know, at this point. But Week 2 exposed the back end of that Packer secondary. Kentrell Bryce,
yes,
HaHa Clinton Dix, Jermaine Whitehead, guys who are no longer on this team. A couple, you know, one who's not even in the league, I don't think.
Yeah.
And started the ball towards Tremont Williams eventually playing safety because on the back end they couldn't cover.
Terrible.
They weren't in the right spots.
Yeah.
And that's why Kirk Cousins had those stats, because late in that game, over the top Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen catch and run. I mean, you're right about Alexander and King and Williams in terms of coverage, but this is one of the reasons Adrian Amos is here. Stephon Diggs, I think for Mike Pettine, isn't going to get past him. You know, Adrian Amos isn't going to be sort of lost in space.
No.
You know, and Darnell Savage Jr. So I think, you know, yes, there's risk, but I also think, you know, you can go back a year ago, see the, you know, the cracks that turn into a flood, if you will, you know, they feel they've plugged those.
Yeah, they need to have Savage play in the middle because Adrian Amos is not going to be able to make the plays he made against Allen Robinson
yeah.
and, you know, with Diggs and Thielen. They're going to need someone who can get sideline to sideline. Now, maybe they play some kind of cover two man and they play both safeties back. But my guess is they're going to have to use, when they go to base defense, they're going to have to use Amos near the line of scrimmage,
yeah.
too. So speed will be a big factor. They didn't have that last year. They weren't fast. They have depth at corner. They didn't have that last time. I really think the game will be won on the offensive and defensive line. I think this is where the Packers have to win. And, you know, I think Pat Elflein, the left guard, is questionable.
Yeah.
And I think he might not play. They got a rookie at center. So they're going to put a lot of pressure on the middle of that offensive line.
Yeah, and Kirk Cousins can't move like Mitch Trubisky could.
No. They don't have to worry about, you know, they don't have to hesitate on the outside, you know, and worry about him getting out around the corner. They can just go after Kirk Cousins. So that's, to me, if the Vikings line is up to it, then they got a pretty good chance of winning. If not, then I give the Packers a pretty good chance.
Right. Well, so then let's flip it to the other way. You know, obviously Aaron Rodgers took 5 sacks. I think, you know, upon further review,
yeah.
we could look. There were probably some times there where he should have dumped the ball off or maybe gotten the ball out as opposed to taking that hit. But, you know, relatively healthy. Bakhtiari, I think, was limited with a back. He was listed on the injury report. I don't
mm-hmm.
– I mean, as we record this, I anticipate their starting five to be in good shape. But obviously this is a very good Vikings defense. Maybe not the caliber of Chicago's, but I would imagine this offensive line – and quarterback for the Packers need to, I mean, to me, that was, week one was maybe a tough preseason game. This is, I mean, it's got to happen, right? How long, you know, they've got to run the ball and they've got to complete some passes, right? And Rodgers has to get some semblance of a rhythm.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a tough task, but it has to happen this week, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to address this in my column on Sunday, and so I don't want to give a lot of it away. But I will say this, that that offense has to have a chance to function the way it is, you know, the way it's supposed to work. And I don't think we've really seen that. We didn't see it all that much in the preseason because you didn't have the starters in there. We saw a little bit against Chicago, but Chicago put so much pressure on them that there were so many breakdowns, you know. I mean, Bakhtiari gave up a sack and two holding penalties. Corey Linsley gave up a sack. Billy Turner got knocked around.
Lane Taylor got run over.
Lane Taylor is in danger of losing his job after that performance. The only guy who played well was Brian Bulaga.
Yeah.
He was the only one who didn't have a real bad mark on him. So it's hard to judge what they did in that first week. But that said, they need to be farther along. They need to figure out how to get this offense running the way it should. And I still go back to the preseason, and I still have a problem with them not playing at all in the preseason, especially that first game. People are probably tired of hearing me bang that drum, but, you know, they had a healthy offensive line. They were playing at home. They could have played Rodgers a quarter, a little more than that, and they didn't. So, okay, I'm done with that. I'm done.
Well,
I'm moving on.
You know, especially when the head coach and the quarterback immediately post-game talked about just the operation of the offense. You know, the quarterback says, I got to get out of the huddle, which is something we heard all through camp.
Yeah.
That was the one time Matt LaFleur was getting irritated, was the urgency out of the huddle. Well, what did we hear about in Chicago? Urgency out of the huddle.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Rodgers talking about the play clock getting down too much, and, you know, he kind of put it a little bit on the play call, saying there's just a lot of language in the play call in order to get it out and do all, you know. So I think those are natural hiccups to work through, but to your point, it's more difficult to do that in the regular season. You know, Brian Bulaga said, hey, you know, in terms of that tough Bears team, he's like, look, you know, Minnesota's going to be good. Dallas is a good defense. Denver's, like, we can't use the excuse of they're also good.
Yeah.
Right? So I think there needs to be some semblance of chemistry and rhythm. And to me, Tom, I mean, you wrote about this last week in advance of the Bears game, the Davante Adams targets. Adams had 8 targets, 4 catches, none in the second half.
Yeah.
He's your best offensive player outside the quarterback right now. And I think, to me, if you're going to get this offensive rhythm, for as much as I believe the run game needs to work, 17 needs to work.
Yeah.
So what better way to get it going than some, you know, moving him inside, some of those crossing routes, some quick slants, catch and run, kind of get it rolling. I think that's a good way to get this offense going, as even Aaron Jones in the run game.
Yeah, and here's part of the dilemma I'll be writing about on Sunday is, so there's one play where Rodgers clearly audibles to get Davante Adams the ball. He's in a situation where he sees it's going to be a blitz, and he wants to get the ball to Davante Adams, figuring he's going to have a one-on-one. And the Bears adjust, it's not there, and he gets sacked. You know, I can't blame him in that situation for wanting to go to Davante Adams. You got to get the ball to your best players. But, you know, and then the line broke down too quickly for him to go to his other reads. So the question is, do they go organically and let Davante Adams go with 3 catches because the other team is double-teaming him?
Triple-teaming,
but they're winning.
Times, yeah.
You know, maybe they have to just organically allow this offense to take its place before they start doing, you know, forcing the ball into guys.
I mean, that's a good point. You mean Geronimo Allison had no targets. Valdez-Scantling, I mean, the receiving core was essentially non-existent.
Yeah.
I mean, the tight ends we saw have an impact. Each had a catch. Look, I think the Bears did to Adams what they did to Jimmy Graham last year. You know, where they sort of said, okay, here's the guy, let's take him away.
Yeah, they lined up like Mac in front of him and just beat the crap
right.
out of
him. Right, and then there were, obviously the thing that went viral where after there was one incompletion, Adams is counting all the Bears around him.
Yeah, there were three guys around him, you know.
So, but that's part of, you mentioned the organic part of the offense. To me, Matt LaFleur has said this is, it presents answers. Right? There's always supposed to be an answer. Well, then I'm curious what the answer is this week. Is the answer moving Adams around to get him going? Clearly the quarterback has a comfort level and feels that involvement's good. Or is the answer telling the quarterback, throw it to Geronimo Allison, throw it to the other guys, check it to Graham or Aaron Jones, and the organic stuff for 17 is going to happen. I don't know. We don't know. That's maybe part of the issue here.
Yeah, and here's a question that needs to be answered. What happens when your running game isn't working? Is your entire passing game screwed because you can't run the ball because everything is predicated off your play action? I mean, sure looked like it. It sure looked like they couldn't get anybody open. You know, once it was clear they couldn't run the ball, you know, even when Rodgers went back, there didn't seem to be anybody open. And so I wonder about that. What's your answer when a team is stopping you? Now, I do believe they didn't run the ball enough, and they were starting to run the ball a little more effectively in the second half, and then they stopped. And I'm not really sure. I don't want to say they stopped, but it makes me wonder if they had stuck with the run in the first half, maybe in the second half some of that stuff would have started to break a little bit more. It didn't start to break until late. You saw, like, there's a 9-yard run. Jones had perfect wide zone, exactly how it should be, cuts back into the middle, 9 yards. They started to run it okay at the end there, so... whether that was because the Bears were playing pass or I don't know, but I just feel like you've got to stick with the run and you got to convince Rodgers to stick with the run.
I mean, and that's obviously something we talked about all through camp, right? Is will the quarterback allow for that to a degree? And to Matt LaFleur's credit, I guess he said in the second half, he probably tried to get a little too cute. You mentioned a crack toss play to Jamal Williams that went for negative yardage. I kind of set him behind the sticks. And I think the balance, if you're a Packers fan and you're curious what you're going to see and how this should work, is really a 60-40 split where 40% of the plays are actual handoffs. This offense, if you go to Los Angeles, San Francisco, Atlanta, I mean all the way back in the modern iteration of this, it's a 40% running system, and obviously the quarterbacks and receivers still get their numbers when you're putting it up. They ran it 30%, 32% of the time against Chicago. They didn't run a bunch of plays anyway. But in a close game, you would have thought it still would have stayed. So Matt LaFleur said he's like, kind of pressed a little bit as a play caller. That negative 12 was hanging on him after one quarter.
Yeah,
so.
And maybe as a rookie head coach, knowing that the game is in his hands as opposed to just as an offensive coordinator, he felt like he had to bail out of the run because they weren't doing anything and rely more on his quarterback. But I think the mistake was there, stick with your run. You know, your defense is playing lights out. Stick with the run. If you have, you've got, now he knows this. He's got a defense that's pretty good. He's got a punter that punted like an elite weapon. Now he's got the chance to establish the run and make that part of who the Green Bay Packers are. So I'll be really interested to see how they call it, how he calls it on Sunday against the Vikings, who are another really good defense and really hard to run against.
And that, I'm curious, too, if that also helps convince Rodgers of this, too, where you don't, that balance, both Rodgers and LaFleur talked about, well, you want to be aggressive, you don't want to turn the ball over, maybe we'll try to push the envelope a little more, but also recognizing there is a defense. You can actually play the field position game to a degree.
Yeah.
If it's not...
It's not very fun. It's not very exciting. But it wins games. And, you know, right now, they play five of six at home. You got to come out of this at 5-1, 4-2.
I think so.
And you got to win by hook or crook. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's pretty or not. As the season goes on, then you worry a little bit about production because it's going to get you're going to need that offensive production later on. Right now, if you can win and take advantage of the fact that everybody's playing preseason football and you can win with defense and special teams, then by gosh, you better do it.
Well, especially because look at this. I mean, Tom, we talked about it. The reason this roster has been turned over, there's a new head coach, is because it's been a bad team for 2 years. Because they haven't been able to win on special teams or win on defense. Like, it's been, you know, yes, Matt LaFleur's hired to bring an offense here, but clearly Brian Gutekunst and his staff invested a lot on defense. We talked about it. That side of the ball would have to be ready to win right away. They were Thursday night. If they stay healthy, I imagine, you know, you're right. You got to be ready to win 17-10 or 13-9 Sunday. Not sexy, but if you can get to 2-0, 3-1, whatever it may be, I mean, that history shows that that bodes well for your playoff chances later in the year.
Yeah. Now, one thing that's going to entice Rodgers to throw is the Vikings are thin in the secondary. I believe Mackenzie Alexander is out for this game. So that leaves them with Trey Waynes, Xavier Rhodes, and I believe Mike Hughes didn't play in week one. And I'm not sure if he's going to be up this week. He's their slot corner, he and Alexander. So all of a sudden, you know, you're going to have Rodgers looking at backups, you know, in the slot. If they go four wides or whatever, is he going to try to pick on that? So, you know, that's another factor that could work against running the ball as they go. I mean, you know, in McCarthy's way of thinking, that kind of matchup calls for you to attack it down after down after down. You know, so I wonder how they'll attack that.
Yeah, no, it'll be it feels very old school to a degree, the way this should go. I think you got two teams with what $200 million worth of quarterbacks on the field, and yet it feels like we might see 18 runs, you know, in the first quarter. You know what I mean?
It's just sure could, you know. I mean, I don't know what the Vikings are going to run right into run heavy defense and just say we're going to run it anyways, or are they going to check into, you know, passing mode and try to take advantage of man-on-man coverage. That'll be really interesting
to see. I mean, I think, you know, and maybe Mike Zimmer would trust Gary Kubiak and Kevin Stefanski enough to do that, but I just, I guess... when that guy for this many years has been cycling through play callers with the directive of running the ball, I just I have a hard time thinking, you know, they're going to come out and try to chuck it early. Yeah. But you know, we'll see.
I do. On the flip side, Rodgers has to be nervous about the pass rush because the Vikings can bring it. I mean, they can flat out bring it, and if they block the way they did against the Bears, he's going to be sacked five times again. So that's going to be a key matchup is Packers offensive line.
Speaking of, and you mentioned, you know, Lane Taylor, Billy Turner, you know, the one new addition. Is the interior the concern here? Because, you know, Zimmer likes to bring that double A gap. Yes. I mean, it they do what they do. This isn't Chuck Pagano. This isn't Vic Fangio in a week or so. I mean, the Vikings just kind of run their stuff. Does that help to a degree, or was it concerning enough, at least in the interior, that you're like, wow, I you know, is Linval Joseph going to create the same problem that Roy Robertson caused early, or is it different because the Packers just have a better sense of what the Vikings do?
I mean, I think they do. I don't think there's a big question mark with Zimmer. The thing that he does is, at least from what Rodgers has told us and others, is that he throws wrinkles into his game plans. But Lane Taylor and Corey Linsley know all about the double-A gap blitz. They've seen it for their entire careers. It's new to Billy Hunter. So I do expect them to stress that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I would, after the performance they had against the Bears, I would stress the inside of the Packers line and try to really beat them inside.
Because I think overall that left guard spot is the one where I'm sort of curious to see what the leash is, right? I mean, Lane Taylor was put on notice the first preseason game, won the job 3 weeks later. It's really the only personnel issue sort of out there that you just kind of wonder if it's a, hey, that's not working, if they just make a call.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Because then it's over. I don't know if you can go back and forth.
Right.
Right?
Right. Yeah, Lane Taylor has to they have to give him one more shot at least, and he's got to play better football. I mean, he's not really built for this offense. I think he's more of an inside zone type guy. So I think they're playing him because of his experience.
Yeah.
Elgton Jenkins, I think, is ultimately going to be a better player. He's more physically gifted, better fit for the offense. But Lane Taylor, I don't think it's easy for offensive linemen to play with Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
First, you know, it takes. I don't know who said this. Some assistant coach with the Packers. It takes an offensive lineman a year to figure out how to play with Aaron Rodgers because there's all that stuff at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
He's doing the hard counts. He's changing plays. He's running, you know, he's moving all over the place.
His footwork is so different that, he's really not where you think he's supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah. So I totally expect Billy Turner to struggle. And Elgton Jenkins, you know, his head might explode if they put him in there too soon. So
you touched on it there briefly. And again, I go read, for your listening, go read Tom this weekend. I do want to ask about Rodgers. In this way, what is, in the context of Drew Brees, for instance, Monday night, he played well, had great numbers. They probably could have put that game away early if Drew Brees 6 years ago could hit Ted Ginn in stride and it's a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Rodgers, great play to Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Look great, no look, all that fun stuff on Twitter. But, you know, maybe if he sets and throws on time, it's either a bigger gain or perhaps a score in stride. Where do you think Rodgers is physically at this point? He's healthy. It's the first time he's exited a game healthy in a year and a half.
Yeah.
What did you make of his overall performance? And maybe is it too early to think, you know, put it all together of new system and age and the interesting footwork Matt LaFleur says. I don't know. Thoughts on the quarterback's play?
Well, I'll sort of address this too on Sunday, but footwork is an integral part of, you know, throwing accurately and with distance. And if you look at that play, Rodgers' footwork was not good. I mean, he was off balance. He was throwing across his body, and he didn't get as much on it. I mean, he's used to using his arm to do that. I think as you get older, you have to be more disciplined with your feet. And I don't know if he ever will. He's done it one way for so long. I mean, I don't know that Brett Favre ever changed his footwork. You know, he relied on his arm. His footwork was awful at times. He threw from one foot, and he was always backpedaling, you know, because he didn't want to get guys rolling up on him, his ankles. but it didn't stop him from being really successful. Question is, you know, do you recognize your limitations? If you don't recognize your own limitations, then I think you're kind of doomed. I think then you're going to have a problem. So Rodgers has to figure out what his limitations are now, because he's not superhuman. He's not, you know, even Tom Brady can't do everything he did 10 years ago. He just can't.
Yeah, it's just that, I mean, you're older.
yeah. But no, you know, if you know what you can't do, then you're in a far better place.
Right, because then you know what you can't do.
If you're in denial about what you can't do. So I think that's a really, that'll be an interesting thing to watch. That's a season-long thing.
Right.
I mean, that won't be answered Sunday against the Vikings. But, you know.
You get breadcrumbs along the way, though. That's the thing.
Yeah,
I mean, you have
do.
A better picture in week 10 or 11.
Yeah.
But it's things you notice 1 through 9, right?
Yeah.
And how that builds and on top of each other, maybe how things change or don't change
as
that happens.
So. I have to, I'm going to rant a little bit. But I have to say I am really, really tired of the narrative, the national narrative that Aaron Rodgers is so far and above and the reason the Packers will go to the Super Bowl. It's not. I mean, he can't be a one-man team. He can play above and beyond. But when they won the Super Bowl, they had the number one defense in the NFL. And he played lights out. I mean, that's some of the best football I've ever seen a quarterback play. Probably better than Favre ever played that string. But it still took a number one defense to win the Super Bowl. And so all these people are, you know, saying, well, now he's out of McCarthy's offense and this will set him free and he's going to carry this team. No, he's not. He's a really good quarterback, but he's in a stage of his career that he needs other people. And I think Matt LaFleur sees that, but I don't know if Rodgers sees it. And certainly the national audience does not see it. You know, the national media does not see that. They definitely feel that, you know, Aaron Rodgers has been wasted and all that kind of stuff. To me, he just hasn't had the right amount of talent around him defensively, and now he does.
Yeah.
So let's see where he takes it, you know. But let's see if he embraces Matt LaFleur's system and, you know, says to himself, okay, this is a vehicle for me to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, it's look, 2010 was a long time ago. You know, run the table. Is a few years ago. I mean, for as good as that stretch was that he played that game in Dallas, not many other quarterbacks in the league can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. You know, I mean, if you have the number 25 ranked defense or a special teams unit that's awful, that can only take you so far. I think the Packers have seen that over the last decade.
Yeah, and you know, McCarthy takes a lot of the blame for his offense, and towards the end it was stale. It didn't mean it was a bad offense and he can't coach, but to me what hurt him the most was he never found a special teams coach that was any good. And Ted Thompson didn't get him a defense.
Yeah.
He tried, but Brian Gutekunst has given LaFleur a
yes.
pretty dang good defense. He's hit on a lot of the stuff that he's done. And, you know, I hope Rodgers, you know, for his sake, recognizes that this is his opportunity, but it's not all about him.
Right.
You know?
The one thing I want, as we wrap up here, I find interesting as a relative newcomer to the beat. You know, I was around a little bit from 12 to 14. We've talked about it a little bit on previous podcasts because the head coach has talked about it. And this is making a concerted effort to ramp up the fan base here for home games.
Yeah,
and it seems like a weird thing for us to talk about.
It does.
But
blah, blah, blah,
but,
blah,
but
blah.
But here's the thing, though, Tom. The reason I'm bringing it up is because the head coach has drilled this.
Yeah.
Since the preseason, the team has tried different things, and then on Monday of the home opener, the club announces all of these things they're going to do, signage and videos to tell the fans what to do and when. It's interesting, and I will say this before you get to it. So since going 8-0 in 2014, the division opponents are 6-5-1 at Lambeau. The Lions have a winning record. The Vikings have a winning record. Only the Bears have still struggled here.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it there. And that's the only thing to me that I think is maybe they've seen that and think something needs to change.
So the crowd is the reason they're 6-5-1? I mean, give me a break. And I'm sorry, but, you know, even though it sounds like I'm pounding on Rodgers, and I don't mean to be, you know, just focusing on him. But, you know, the thing about telling the crowd, don't do the wave, you know, cheer this, cheer that, you know. Play really well, and the crowd will cheer you like nothing you've ever seen, you know. There's one way to make a home field an advantage, and that's to kick butt, you know. The Vikings have done a pretty good job of manufacturing over the years, yeah, noise, creating an environment that's really loud. That's great, but it hasn't taken them to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Just because you got a loud stadium doesn't take you to the
Super
Bowl.
Yeah, the Chiefs haven't been to a Super Bowl since the 60s.
Yeah, and they have the loudest stadium. Seattle fans, I mean, to me that just grew out of itself. They've always been like that. They've been like that when the Kingdom was
right
there. You know, they started the wave.
Right.
And
shockingly, Beastquake, what was that? That was a key play in a playoff game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that
yeah. And defense, you know, they had a great defense, yeah, that, you know, fired people up. So stop worrying about that stuff. Yeah, it's cool to shoot off some fireworks and, okay, I don't, yeah, care. But, you know, horns on third down and get some first downs first, you know.
Right.
Get some first downs, score a touchdown, you know, get an interception. You know, I don't know. I think your fans will react if you get back to playing really good football.
That's my feeling as well, Tom. It's just interesting, and it's interesting because they've made it a talking point.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a unique thing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I just, it really, the only place I've ever seen totally respond is Lucas Oil, when, like, you could hear a pin drop when Peyton Manning ran that offense.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, that's the exception. That most fans are just kind of doing their own thing and cheer when they want. I mean, you know, so this, I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens on Sunday at noon with this. It was just a really interesting point of emphasis. We'll put it that way.
I'll tell you what. If you want to stop the wave from doing, cut off alcohol after the first quarter, and then you won't see the wave anymore.
Yeah.
You know, let's see if they would do that. No, they won't do that.
Right.
Too much money involved in that. I don't know. I have been covering the Packers since the 90s. And during that period when Holmgren was here and they were revived and Favre was just, you know, electric. The stadium was electric. It was like that every week. And when Rodgers was playing his best, it was like that. So get back to winning and then ask the crowd, you know, to turn it up a notch. Don't do it while you're losing. I mean, look at, I think it was Eddie Jackson,
yeah,
ripped the Bears fans, yeah, for booing. How could you rip them for booing when your offense was playing like,
right,
that? You know, play better.
Right. That's usually at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's usually the thing that gets your crowd going or not going,
yeah,
the most is the way you're playing. So,
yeah,
well, we will see. Obviously, if the Packers can get to 2-0,
I still have some rant left. If,
okay,
if you have anything, no, I mean, if you have anything else that we need to address, because I feel very salty today.
Yeah. Little, we need some more coffee.
I'm done. Yeah, I'm done. People don't need to hear me anymore.
Well, thank you for joining us. So again, this is the JS Online Packers News Podcast brought to you by Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino. You will get us again post-game.
Yes.
We will see if you know, the audio equipment's a little shaky after Sunday, if the fan base and the fireworks and the
our ears might be ringing.
So we will see. We will see. It's a big game. Home opener for Matt LaFleur and the Green Bay Packers in 2019. So for Tom, I am Jim. We will talk to you this weekend.